Welcome to the Strategic Investor. Join us as we interview some of the world's most productive asset managers and uncover sophisticated and unique investment strategies in the markets. Here is your host, Charlie Wright.
Hello and welcome to Strategic Investor Radio on OC Talk Radio, where we bring you investment strategies you are not hearing elsewhere. We'd like to welcome for the very first time on our show, Edward Brown, responsible for investor relations at Pacific Private Money. They are an alternative source for real estate loans, and he speaks to us from the San Francisco Bay Area in California. Edward, welcome to Strategic Investor Radio.
Thank you, Charlie. Pleasure to be with you.
So, Edward, Pacific Private Money raises funds from investors, lends it on real estate secured by property, and the specialty is owner-occupied properties. And in addition to that, you are a radio talk show host, which makes you immediately suspect here. So let's begin with a brief background of yours here, Edward.
Okay. So as you mentioned, I host two radio shows. One's called The Best of Investing, and the other one is a national sports show called Sports Econ 101, where we talk about sports and business and how that relates. Currently, in the investor relations department at Pacific Private Money, which we'll go into further, but my background is I have a bachelor's in accounting and a master's in taxation from Golden Gate University. I've also done a lot of teaching and lecturing, being an adjunct professor, lecturer for banks, real estate, stock brokerage firms, done some television with regard to being on CNN as an expert two different times. I also have written a lot of articles that have been published in a lot of magazines. But it's kind of interesting because I've been also an expert witness in arbitration and court cases dealing with investments, probably because my background, I have a Series 7, I used to have, either currently or formerly, had a Series 7 securities license, life and disability insurance license, certified fund specialist, a California real estate sales license, and a California tax preparer. And one interesting thing that kind of put a feather in my cap, I guess, is I was two things. One, I was appointed by the Department of Justice in 1993 to serve as the chairman of the Shareholder Equity Committee to protect 29,000 shareholders representing a $500 million REIT that had gone bankrupt. And also, I was an expert witness consultant regarding tax returns and fraudulent financial statements in the largest judgment in U.S. history against a gun manufacturer, and I'm not anti-gun. I was just brought in as an expert because of my taxation and accounting background, and my spreadsheets were published in the United States Bankruptcy Court Proceedings. So that's kind of a background on me.
Okay, appreciate it. So tell us about Pacific Private Money, basically what you guys do and what your basic strategy is.
Okay, so we imagine us exactly like a bank, except that we can work a lot faster than a bank because we don't have all the bureaucracy of, you know, seven levels of approval, et cetera. So we raise money from the public, very similar, if you can imagine us, very similar to a mutual fund, but instead of having stocks and bonds, we have mortgages as our investment.
And you require that the investors be accredited investors, correct?
That is correct. But okay. We do have an additional website called privatemoneyloans.com, where people can purchase loans from us where they don't have to be accredited. Yields would be a little bit lower than if they were in the fund, but it's a way for unaccredited investors to invest.
Okay, so you raise money from these investors and then to make real estate loans, and how does that process work?
Borrower will come to us usually from either a bank. We actually get referrals from banks because a lot of times bank turndowns, they don't want to just tell their client or customer, sorry, we can't help you. They'll say, gee, you know, there's another company out there that might be able to lend you money for your real estate called Pacific Private Money. So we'll get real estate referrals from banks, mortgage brokers. Every once in a while, the general public will just know about us, but realtors will find us because a lot of times, as you mentioned before, with regard to the personal residences that we do, because we have that specialty, if you can imagine being a realtor and trying to purchase, help your client purchase a house, but they haven't sold the old house yet. So the bank has usually said, gee, I'm sorry, Mr. Potential Borrower, you don't qualify for two mortgages. Sell your house first and then buy your next house. Well, that doesn't work for a lot of people because they don't want to move twice. And, you know, they might lose out on the potential purchase because, you know, property moves fairly quickly nowadays. So what we can do is come in and help them purchase the new house, and then gives them time to go ahead and sell the old house. If I can give you a quick example, excuse me, had a situation where there was an older couple who owned a house free and clear that was worth $2 million. They were downsizing. They wanted to go from a two-story house to a one-story house. So the house that they wanted to buy was $1.2 million. They lived on Social Security plus a little bit of investment income. And unfortunately, the bank said, gee, you don't qualify for a loan for $1.2 million house. Well, again, and this house happened to actually be down the street from where they lived. Again, they didn't want to move twice. They wanted to just buy the house and then give themselves time to fix up their old house and sell it. Well, we were able, ordinarily we'll lend up to 70% loan to value. But in this case, we actually were able to lend them 100% of the target price, the $1.2 million, because we took a first mortgage on the $1.2 million house, the target property, and cross-collateralized it with the old property. So our loan to value was about roughly 36%, I think the figure is. And so it was a very conservative loan for us, and it solved the problem for the borrower to go ahead and buy the new house, and that gave them time to go ahead and sell their old house after they were able to fix it up.
So are they all owner-occupied, or are some of them other than owner-occupied?
We'll do a lot non-owner-occupied. We just have a specialty of owner-occupied because we've spent the money. A lot of private real estate lenders are not in the space that we're in because it's expensive. I mean, you got to pay for the software, the legal, the continuing education, the extra licenses, and a lot of other real estate people don't, you know, lenders don't want to do that. Well, we did spend the money for all of that stuff, and so our specialty is the owner-occ. Personal residences. However, we do a lot in the residential rental, commercial rental. Again, imagine everything a bank does with regard to real estate loans, except that we don't do really the weird esoteric ones like, you know, cemeteries and stuff like that.
And so typically these loans have about an approximate duration of what?
So we have a special 11-month bridge loan for the owner-occupied loans. There's special rules with Dodd-Frank that you have to follow. But generally speaking, our normal loans run 1 to 3 years. Every once in a while, we'll do a 5-year loan. And in a rare instances, we actually have done 30-year loan. And the reason we've done that is our interest rates are obviously higher than a bank's. And if we are confident that the borrower will be able to refinance us out in, let's say, 2 years, but the person actually needs, the borrower needs a longer-term loan just in case, we're fine making a longer-term loan, knowing in the back of our mind, you know, nobody wants to pay our high interest rates when they can refinance at a bank.
And so are these only on residences, or do you do any commercial?
No, we'll do commercial. You know, we'll do apartment buildings, industrial buildings, R&D, office buildings.
Okay, and how is the property secured? You said one was a first trust deed. I presume they're typically second trust deeds. How is it?
Actually, most of our loans are first trust deeds. However, we will do a second. In fact, in a couple of instances, we've actually done a third mortgage. And that kind of brings me to the point of, you know, I think one of your questions that you're going to ask me is, you know, the misperceptions that investors have about, you know, what we do. And some people will automatically hear a second mortgage and they'll say, oh, it's too risky. I say, well, back up for just a minute. So I did a loan in Orange County. My son went to Chapman University. So the property was literally within a mile of where he went to school. And this borrower needed a $79,000 second mortgage. And the borrower said, I think my property is worth $315,000. And I told my son, you know, drive the property, take a look at it, drive the neighborhood, tell me what you think the property is worth. And he said the property is worth at least $300,000. I said, okay. So this person needed a $79,000 second mortgage because they needed to fix the roof, et cetera, et cetera. Now, the big question is, how much was the first mortgage? Well, in this case, the first mortgage was $19,000. So the combined $19,000 plus $79,000 was $98,000. I was in a very, very well-secured position in second position. And if anything happened, I would just go ahead and pay off the first. But because it was a second mortgage, it commanded a higher interest rate. And back then, that was just a few years ago, the interest rate was 10.99%. So I'll do those kind of loans all day long. I'd much rather do a second like that than a first of, $150,000. On the same property.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Right. But Edward, that's a different scenario than you painted previously. Why was, in that scenario, the borrower willing to go to you and pay a higher interest rate than going to a bank?
This borrower did not want to disturb the first mortgage. It was an extremely low interest rate. And so they didn't want to disturb it. So
okay.
They decided it was smarter for them to just get a second mortgage at a short-term period rather than get a whole new, brand-new mortgage with me. Because remember, once they paid me off, then they were going to have to refinance again. So it was better for them to keep a low first mortgage. And we've had that situation before, not to this degree with only a $19,000 first, but we've had situations where the first mortgage was such a fantastic first mortgage, 2.75% for 25 years left to go on their 30-year loan. And, it's just too good a loan to have them want to pay off.
So how does an investor invest in something like this? Are these pooled? An investor invests into a pool, or do they invest into a particular property? Is it with other people in that single property, or is it by themselves? How does it work for the investor?
Okay, so we have basically two different kinds of programs. One, we do have what they call one-off deals. So there'd be a situation where, one investor or maybe two investors would take down a specific loan. We still have that program, but we're primarily doing the fund, which again is very similar to a mutual fund where you have a pool of mortgages where the manager decides, just like in a mutual fund, the manager decides which stocks to buy. In this case, the manager decides which mortgages he's going to go ahead and fund. And I'll tell you, the reason that we started the fund was some years back, Mark Hanf, who's the president of Pacific Private Money, he was doing one-off type deals. And so he didn't actually have the money himself. He was basically brokering them. And what would end up happening is, let's say a borrower comes and it's just an absolute slam dunk type of deal. The catch is the loan has to close in 10 days. So what Mark would do is he would say, okay, yes, I'll go ahead and I'll make sure that, lock this down. I'll get you your money in 10 days. Well, now the clock starts ticking. And what he would do is he would send out a blast email to maybe, let's say, 50 clients who he knew had, let's say the loan was $300,000, who had $300,000 to invest. And maybe, let's say, 20 minutes later, five people would say, that's fantastic. I'll take it. Well, what ends up happening is only one person would get it, and now he's got to tell four people, gee, I'm sorry, you're too late. And as an investor myself, I've had that situation where brokers have done that to me, and I'm fairly sophisticated. I can make a decision in 5 minutes whether or not I want to do a deal. And it gets very frustrating when you tell the broker, I'll take it, and he says, gee, I'm sorry, you're too late. You say, I only had it for 5 minutes. Come on, give me enough time to analyze this, right? So it doesn't take too many scenarios like that where investors start saying, you know what, stop sending me deals. So Mark was starting to have some clients who were getting a little bit frustrated on that situation, and he decided, the best thing to do is to start a fund, have people invest in the fund, and then that way the fund will have first crack at any of these deals. And then if the fund is, not liquid at the time, then he can go back to those investors and say, okay, who wants a piece of this action, or who wants this loan in its entirety?
And so tell us who the investors are. Are they individuals? Are they advisors with clients? Are they family offices, hedge funds, institutions? Who invests with you guys?
Okay, so right now we're about a $42 million fund. So we're not quite large enough for the institutions. We'll have individuals, retirement accounts. Registered investment advisors love us because they don't really have to babysit the fund from the standpoint of, you know, it's not a mutual fund that is, you know, changes NAV every single day, right? I mean, the mortgages are the mortgages.
Right.
So, you know, the registered investment advisors love us. The, you know, individual investors looking for high income with relatively low risk.
And you guys pay out
retirement accounts.
You guys pay out quarterly, monthly?
Monthly. We pay monthly. And because it's a fund, the you have the choice of whether or not to take the money each month or have it reinvested like you would in a mutual fund to buy more shares. So you get a compounded yield.
And so what are the major objections and concerns by potential investors in investing in this?
The first question is, you know, why would anybody come to you instead of going to a bank? These loans must be risky. And so let me throw in another story here. A few years ago, there was an executive of a very powerful computer company named after a fruit, okay? I think you know which one I'm talking about. This guy, this is the first time I'd ever seen this in my life. His W-2 income was larger than the amount he wanted to borrow. He only wanted to borrow $869,000, and yet he made $1.3 million on his W-2. It's verified.
Okay.
He was buying a house for $1,269,000. He was putting $400,000 down, and he wanted to borrow $869,000. So the ratio, I think, was, you know, 69% or something. So it fit within, you know, our criteria. He also had $5 million worth of this company's stock. All right. He didn't need a company like us. I mean, there's no way, right? So he goes ahead and he goes to a major, his broker went to a major bank, and he was getting a fantastic rate and everything was fine. And he had 3 months to close this deal. He put down a $50,000 non-refundable deposit. The seller told him, listen, you absolutely have to close by April 30th because I'm buying another piece of property myself and I need the money for that. So you better close on time or else I'm going to keep your money. He said, oh yeah, I got 3 months to close. No problem. Well, 2 weeks before the 3 months deadline, the broker calls him up and says, you know what? The bank just pulled out of the deal. He says, are you kidding? Why? He says, well, the higher up compliance department, just due diligence department, just realized you've only worked for that big company for 18 months. You haven't worked there for 2 years. Says, yeah, I know, but wait a minute, hold on. He says, I worked for XYZ company for 9 years before, and I was making $900,000 a year. The reason I went to this other company was they gave me a 50% raise. It just so happened it was 18 months ago. And they said, yes, I know, but the bank says, unless you have 2 years at that company, they're not going to make you the loan. They'll absolutely be delighted in 6 months to make you the loan because you'll have had two full years there.
Well, that makes me,
what about all my stock?
That makes me feel bad. I never worked for a bank here, Edward, so keep going.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
What about the stock I have? Is it, well, it's restricted 144 stock, and, you know, this trillion-dollar company may, you know, could go bankrupt in 6 months. I don't know, right? So this guy, he steps back from the equation. He says, okay, here's my situation. I need $869,000. If I don't close in 2 weeks, not only do I lose my dream home, but I lose my $50,000 non-refundable deposit.
Yeah.
So he comes to us. We close the deal with him. We charged him, I think, 9.75% and a couple of points, and then with no prepayment penalty. And then, sure enough, 6 months later and a day, he finally qualifies and he cashes us out. So, you know, you have these situations where you say, you know, people, the objections, you know, going back to your question, you know, why would people object? They said, well, you know, why would a guy like that need a loan from you? Well, here's a good scenario. You know, he just hadn't worked there long enough. We have situations where people have are self-employed, and banks do not like self-employed. Especially, you know, we had a situation where a guy made $800,000 one year. The next year, he made $500,000. Now, in order to qualify for a realistic loan, he only needed income of about $300,000. But the bank says, gee, you know, you made $800,000, now you made $500,000, you're on a downward spin. And so they decided not to make him a loan.
Oh, my goodness.
And yet he's still qualified for it. So that's part of the objection. You know, people get kind of leery. I'll tell you one quick thing, too, is when we started the fund back in 2003, and then I can't remember, 2003. And I can't remember when the Bernie Madoff thing came off, but, you know, I think it was like 2005 or something where it kind of, you know.
Yeah, it was 2008. Yeah. Go ahead.
2008.
Yeah, it was a little after that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. We started the fund in 2013. I apologize.
Oh, okay.
But by 2000, let's say 15, you know, the Bernie Madoff thing was still there. And, you know,
yeah,
people look at alternative investments and they get all wigged out about it, right?
Yeah.
And they say, you know, how do we know you're not Bernie Madoff? I said, well, you know what? That's a very legitimate question. So now what I personally did before helping Mark on start the fund at Pacific Private Money, he had about 40 loans in the portfolio. I went to my old title officer who I did a lot of business with, and I said, you know what? I said, people are going to wonder, you know, where the proof is in the pudding on this. I said, would you be kind enough to pull preliminary title reports on half the loans we have? And you pick the loans. I'm not going to pick them. And you tell me whether or not when we say we've got a $300,000 first deed of trust on 123 Main Street, San Francisco, that we actually have it recorded. And sure enough, all 20 of them that you pulled were recorded. So, you know, I tell them, I said, you know, it's kind of a trust and verify. I said, we're an open book. We will show you exactly every loan that we have, the address, the amount. You can look it up for yourself. You can call your own title officer to make sure that when we say we have this, that we really do, so that the assets backing what we say we have are really there versus, you know, the Bernie Madoff situation. I think he just kind of handed pieces of paper out, said, hey, your account's worth $1 million. Now it's worth $2 million, you know, not backed by anything. And here's the funny thing is I tell people, I said, now I'm going to say this kind of tongue in cheek, okay? But when you know, Vanguard is a fine company and I think they manage, if I'm not mistaken, $7 trillion, okay? When they send out a big prospectus that says they own, you know, 1 million shares of Facebook and 2 million shares of IBM or whatever, how do you know they own it? Just because it's on a piece of paper? I mean, you'd literally have to go to the registrar's office to say, "Let prove to me that you actually own this." Now, I'm not really challenging Vanguard because I'm sure they're a fine company, you know. But it's kind of nice to say that when we say this $42 million fund that we have, we can show you exactly where all the money is. But, you know, there's the objection of the, gee, how do we know you're not Bernie Madoff? Okay, well, there you go. One other objection is, you know, like a tip, I'm just kind of comparing this to a conventional investment, like a mutual fund, where people say, well, what's the liquidity? You know, I can just call my broker up and say, sell my mutual fund. You'd think, okay, well, these are illiquid assets, right? And that's true. I mean, if you have a 2-year loan in your portfolio as a mortgage investment, you can't just go to the street and sell it right away. However, we have a situation where we're only requiring people to have a 1-year hold. And that's more of an SEC rule. After 1 year, you can liquidate your entire account with no penalty. There's no fee going in. There's no fee going out. You say, well, yeah, but where does the money come from? Okay, so a couple of things. One, as new money is coming into the fund from investors, the first thing that we do is we look at and we say, before deploying that money in a new loan, is there anybody who wants to get out? Anybody wants to get out? Boom, we pay them off. The other thing is we are constantly getting paid off on loans in our portfolio. So even though we're doing loans of 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, even 5 year, the average duration is only about 5.5 months. The reason for that is we're lending to people who can get conventional financing if given enough time. So when loans pay off, again, the first thing we do is anybody want to get out? If they do, boom, here's the money, you're paid off in full. The other part is that we now have this additional, you know, because let's say that there's no new money coming into the fund anymore. And also, let's say, for whatever reason, people cannot refinance their loans. So we're in a stuck portfolio. We also have the ability to sell loans on a platform, which is our new website called privatemoneyloans.com. In fact, some of the big players who you know, I know you know these people, they've actually called us to say, we have money, we want to buy your loans, because they know the kind of loans that we have. So there's a big demand for our loans. We could sell them at any time. The reason we don't is we got to make sure that we have another place to put that money. So there's an extreme liquidity that you don't find in other alternative investments with our Pacific Private Money Fund.
Okay. Well, that's great. So I appreciate all of that. One real quick question here. What book on investing would you recommend for our listeners?
Okay. So this is going to sound a little funny. But actually, believe it or not, the Bible is probably the best. And the reason is, if you look at both Proverbs and Psalms, there's an incredible amount of common sense in there. I also like In Search of Excellence, which is an older book. But if you just look at the wisdom in the Bible, it's really true. And I'm not trying to be a religious fanatic here. I'm just trying to say, just look at the words on the page and take it to heart. Because, you know, the one of the big things I think people have a problem with is they go for pie in the sky. You know, I'm going to just be able to get rich quick. And I look at it and I say, my whole premise is, don't lose money. If people lose 20% on their investment in any point in time, which, you know, can happen in the stock market and other investments, you got to make 25% the next year just to break even. And then, and you still haven't won, you still haven't made any money. So I like to take the step of a little bit slower and, be prudent with your investments.
Okay. So Edward, your website, for those who would like to know more.
You can go to PacificPrivateMoney.com and also PrivateMoneyLoans.com. And PacificPrivateMoney.com, if you want to invest, you do have to be an accredited investor. PrivateMoneyLoans.com, you just have to register. We're not going to blast you with a bunch of spam or anything, but you do have to register. And that, but you don't have to be an accredited investor.
Okay, Edward, thank you very much. And best wishes for your two radio talk shows you had mentioned. And we really appreciate you joining us here today. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. We got to do this again because I got a lot more fun stories for you.
Okay, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Edward Brown, in charge of investor relations at Pacific Private Money, speaking to us from the Bay Area of California. You've been listening to Strategic Investor Radio on OC Talk Radio. We'd love to have you contact us at info@strategicinvestorradio.com and go to our website to hear podcasts of all of our interviews and shows, strategicinvestorradio.com. I'm Charlie Wright, wishing you all an enjoyable week and productive investing.
Strategic Investor Radio is a production of OC Talk Radio and is provided for educational purposes only. Content of this program and the views of the guests should not be considered as recommendations by OC Talk Radio or investment advice from the host Charlie Wright or any other entity attached to this production. Investors should always consult qualified financial, investment, tax, or legal professionals prior to investing. We'll be right back.